This is a production of Money Honey Media. All advice in this podcast is general in nature. It should not be applied to your personal circumstances without first discussing with a tax professional.
Hi, I'm Jo McCauley.
And I'm Martin Lowe.
And this is the Accidental Bookkeeper podcast, brought to you by Evaluate Your Business, where we have fun unpacking the boring but necessary things you need to know to run your small business. So this week, Martin, we're talking about cybersecurity.
Yes, we are, Jo.
Yes, we are. And you are a bit of a, that's one of your interest areas, much more than mine. So that's why you're going to be generating most of the content in this conversation, because you know a lot more than I do. So where would we like to start, Martin? Maybe we can understand what is cybersecurity.
Sure. So cybersecurity is essentially the practice of deploying systems, processes and practices to protect you, your business and your customers' data from malicious online attacks.
Okay. So what is a malicious online attack?
Well, there's been quite a few in the last couple of years that everybody I'm sure are aware of. Optus, Medibank, Latitude Finance, and these are just some of the larger companies. It's happening on a much broader scale than just the ones that we hear about in the media.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you some context, Joe, in 2023, the US reportedly lost $12.5 billion due to cybercrime.
Mm-hmm.
And it's predicted by 2025 that globally it's expected to reach $10.5 trillion in losses.
Okay, that's quite a lot.
That's very, very, very big.
Okay, so I know you talked about some of those Australian-based ones that we've had. Have you got any figures on how much they cost those businesses?
I do, actually. So Optus reportedly lost 10 million customers as a result of the incident.
10 million customers?
Yeah,
wow.
And they'd set aside $140 million for that particular incident. So, yeah, pretty significant. Medibank, around 9 million records and around $26 million loss. And Latitude Finance, around 14 million customers and I think it was $98 million loss.
So that would have been 14 million customers that were affected probably,
yes,
not how many they
correct.
Lost.
Yes.
And possibly that's the same for Optus, but I know they definitely would have lost a fair few customers as a result of it. We may not know those actual figures. Yeah, just
no,
to
that's
clarify.
True. Yep. Yeah. No, absolutely. Thanks, Jo, for that clarification.
So, but I mean, I guess that's one of the reasons why cybersecurity is so important, because of not just the financial cost, but the reputational risk of having your business, being all over the news. Like, you know, I'm sure it was Optus's worst nightmare and Telstra's, dream that, their major competitor was all over the news having data hacked out of their system.
Yeah, well, you only had to see their advertising during that time. It was all about security from Telstra, how secure their network was. So,
exactly. Yeah, but I'm sure they have to back that up as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, they do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, locally, according to CyberGov, which is a major government website that publishes a lot of really good material around how to protect yourself, and I'll talk more on that in a minute. But in 2022-23, there are around 94,000 reports of cybercrime, which is up 23% year on year.
Yeah. It's definitely something I think people are a lot more aware of it. They're probably also more likely to report it. And, I mean, of course, it's also happening more as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, what has been published in terms of the losses, on average, small businesses that lost in Australia experienced average losses of 46,000, medium-sized businesses 97,000, and large businesses 71,000. So yeah, and apparently one report was lodged every 6 minutes last year.
Okay.
So
that's a lot. All right, so who is at risk?
So really anybody who's got a connected device to the internet's at risk of being exposed. essentially in a number of different ways. Ultimately, loss of secure data if you house secure customer data, sensitive data.
Or your own as well,
absolutely. Yeah. Loss of customers as well. As a result, as you rightly pointed out, Optus, loss of customers and reputation, financial loss as well. And worst case scenario, it can potentially bring down a company due to the loss of data or closure of the company. So it's something that, you know, businesses need to take seriously.
Yeah. I mean, I know for our particular industry, there are industries and the practice is that if we do have any data breach, we have to report it. So I'm not sure if that's the case for every business. I should know that, but we definitely do. So that's something we take very, very seriously here. We've spent a lot of money on our cybersecurity, on our IT people. We put as many protections as we can in place. But what are some of the risks to someone like us, you know?
Well, there's always, you know, one of the biggest areas that get targeted and hit first is through business email compromise.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens where an email drops into someone's inbox and they click on a link that is potentially malicious. And then that's one of the main ways. So key to that, obviously, overcoming that is making sure that your staff are aware, educate your staff around cybersecurity. Make sure you keep them up to date in terms of what's happening in the market and the latest and greatest in terms of training. If you work with an IT partner, as we do, it's really important to actually have those, you know, making sure your software is updated on a regular basis and ensuring that you set up multi-factor authentication and use passphrases more so than passwords.
Mm-hmm.
A passphrase essentially is, you know, multiple words in as part of a password. So 3 or 4 words is ideal with up to 14 characters long, because
mm-hmm.
It makes it a lot harder to guess or to identify. But really, staff education.
So you're recommending we don't use the word password as a password?
No.
Well,
definitely not.
Just on that, you talked about multi-factor authentication. Would you like to just explain what that is?
Yeah, so essentially having multiple ways to authenticate that you are actually the user that's logging into a particular site.
Mm-hmm.
So when you log in, it might be notification through to your device and essentially having a backup device as well. So through your phone, through your email, essentially to identify you as the person that's actually logged into that particular application to say, yeah, this is me.
Yeah. So I know for me, I have a little app on my phone called Google Authenticator.
Yes.
So when I go into a new program, it asks me to take a photo and then it links to that program. So for me to log into most of my programs, I have to have my phone with me. If I don't have my phone with me, it makes it very difficult for us to, or for me to log in. In fact, I really can't, which means if someone is trying to log into my account in another country or even in another office, they can't unless they have that phone with them. So I know there's also some have email multi-factor authentications and stuff like that, but I actually think the phone one's a really good one because the only person who really should have access to your phone is you. You also probably have a password on your phone or a fingerprint recognition or whatever it is that they have. I feel like that makes it a lot more difficult for someone to hack into your account. And if you're difficult to hack into, then they're going to find someone who's an easier target, aren't they?
Yes. Mm. Yeah. And to that point, I think it's about making sure that sensitive data, whether it's your customer data or your own personal data, that is extremely locked down.
Mm.
So typically, they target information like driver's license details, things that are unique to you.
Yeah.
That they can then reuse on the black market.
So what do they do? What do they do with it?
So essentially they take that information and they resell it on the dark web and someone else then can use that to blackmail you. It can use it for identity fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately set up dummy accounts in your name, act as you, and then go and essentially buy up all sorts of stuff or,
yeah.
you know, all sorts of things. But ultimately, yeah, passport details, financial personal details. Sometimes it's as little as an email address and a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, where it gets a little bit more serious is when they've got those real personal details, government details that only, you know, the government has essentially,
mm-hmm.
and or, you know, as I said, driver's license and passports.
Yeah.
That sort of information.
So we see people who have their tax file number compromised. Where we usually find out about this is when we lodge a tax return. And usually where it has come from is, you know, somehow someone has got someone's tax file number, they know their date of birth, they know the basic information, but the tax file number is the one that's harder to find. Because that's something you shouldn't be telling anyone. So if you do not have your tax file number printed on stuff, like it's the only people who really should know your tax file number is the bank, the ATO, and your employer because of the fact that they're paying you. But even then, and that's often where that gets compromised, is that someone's got into the employer's payroll system. But what we do, or you've just given it out because you think you're giving your information to someone who's not really who it is that you think you're giving it to. But what we usually find is that we go to do their tax return and then suddenly we get a delay notification from the ATO saying that the data has been compromised. That means that someone's already lodged a tax return in your name. Usually what they've done is they've gone and made a bodgy tax return situation, so they've made a group certificate up, a whole lot of deductions and what have you, lodged that tax return on your behalf. Clearly it's not your stuff, and then they've taken the refund into their special bank account that they've set up and then moved it offshore or wherever they've moved it to and disappeared out of the you know, system. But one recently that we had, a client had clicked on a, just to give you a bit of an idea, she got a MyGov notification and clicked on it, but she thought it was kind of weird because she hadn't asked for anything in MyGov, but she just clicked on it, and at the time she did it, she thought, oh, that's a bit weird. And the next thing, we got a notice of assessment where they'd actually gone in and amended her tax returns for 2 years and put in a ridiculous claim for expenses, which resulted in a big refund that didn't go to her, went somewhere into a bank account that had been changed on the ATO website. So once they have that, they can get into, so obviously they got into her MyGov account and did it through there. So just be super vigilant, I guess. If you're getting something sent to you, check, don't click on it, and if it doesn't feel right, don't click on it at all.
Yeah, avoid links where possible. From anything. Hyperlinks. It's good practice to actually hover over a hyperlink at the site if you're not sure, just to see, check the spelling, check is it somewhere where you frequent, or is it, you know, something that you haven't seen? Quite often it looks quite legitimate. These claims, they've become so sophisticated now that it looks really legitimate, and it's hard to tell the difference. So just be, as you say, extra vigilant. They use various methods to actually obtain your details, things like malware, where they'll put viruses on your machines. They'll use Trojans or spyware. Malware is just malicious software. That's what it stands for. They use phishing. Phishing's quite common.
Phishing?
I think it's pronounced phishing, but I'd say phishing.
Can you explain that?
That's business. That's what happens in businesses a lot of the time, where they get into your email, and or they'll send an email that looks like it's coming from a legitimate person or organisation that you actually had been dealing with, but actually it's not. Mm-hmm. It's actually a scammer trying to get information out of you. And generally speaking, if ever you're in any doubt, phone the company that you actually deal with all the time. Don't just provide that information. Most large organisations that hold your secure data, they won't ask for stuff over email. So you're best just to pick up the phone, ring them, say, hey, I got this email. Did you send this through to me? But typically they don't ask for that sort of information.
I feel like we've got really good at identifying when someone's giving us a bodgy phone call. Like, you know, you can, first of all, like, we kind of, I think most people now know that the sheriff is not about to arrest them, or that their, you know, toll thing is, you know, although people still would get called out. But we're getting much better at seeing it on our phone and identifying it and knowing not to answer it. But when it comes to email, we're still easily fooled, and I think part of that is they can make it look so much like it's coming from the proper source. They just tweak the email address slightly so it does look like it's coming from Westpac, but it might not be exactly the Westpac URL that we're used to, but we look at it and it looks exactly like it's from Westpac, you know. So we just go, oh, all right, obviously our bank needs something, let's click on it and tell them what they need, you know. Next thing, it's all compromised.
Yep, no, absolutely. And ads as well, like Adware, quite often ads will pop up on your machine and things that you're actually where you've been previously. So you've also got to watch out for ads because, you know, sometimes, and again, in some cases they are legitimate, but, you know, it's always best just to check. And botnets is another way that they actually target people, which is basically a network of computers that are all infected, and they go out and they scroll the internet for vulnerable devices and people, and they actually infect other devices and they just spread that way. So, they're just becoming more and more sophisticated every day. So you've just got to stay vigilant, make sure.
So what are your top tips to stay safe?
So I think some of the things that are often talked about are setting up multi-factor authentication. That's the first thing. Make sure you keep your software updated on all devices. Be really disciplined around that. If you get a request from Google, Apple, or on your devices,
as long as it's genuine, can tell that.
Yeah,
I think that's something. Most people, you know, when you log into your phone, for example, it's asking you, do you want to do an upgrade?
Yes.
You know? Like, you know, that's what it is. It's not someone asking you something fake. Yeah. But a lot of people don't want to do that. Like, a lot of people prefer to keep their system as it was.
Quite often, you know, companies are quite tricky like that. They'll upgrade and they'll make some tweaks, not just security tweaks, but they'll make other tweaks to the platform, and some people don't like those changes. But, yeah, I think when they're talking about security, there's a reason why they're asking, they're doing that. It's to protect you. So make sure that you do that if requested. You know, if in doubt, as I say, phone the company and say, hey, I've got this request. You know, is it from you guys? Antivirus software, as I mentioned, there's lots out there now. And again, they're also trying to act in our interest. So companies like Kaspersky, Bitdefender, McAfee, Trend Micro, they all have, and even Microsoft, so they all have their own.
Norton,
yes, is another one. They all have different software packages. Just make sure that you've got software installed and it's updated on a regular basis. We talked about education of staff. That's really important because quite often they will look to people who may not necessarily be on the front line, but, you know, behind the scenes, and try and use someone else's email address. Internally, like, they could say, Joe, send me an email address from, if they know your email address, send it to me, and it looks like it's legit, it's from you. So
yeah, I know Joel once got a request for a wire transfer from me, and he he's gone, yeah, sure, and then he's like looked over the desk and gone, so what's a wire transfer? I'm like, oh, for God's sake, you know. So then they were like, oh, if you sent it, you know, they really hassled him because he'd actually answered back, you know. But if it does seem out of the ordinary, there's usually a sense of urgency to these things as well. So it'll be like, it's really important, the boss really needs you to do this straight away because of whatever reason. I think it's always still worth checking, particularly if it's a big and unusual transaction. What about policies within your business?
Yeah, absolutely. Having checklists, making sure your team are actually trained on, you know, policies, particularly around passwords, using strong passwords, making sure your passwords are updated frequently, and even checking with your IT provider in terms of how often are they looking at that that sort of stuff for you. yeah, just ensuring that you've got the latest, you know, policies in place to support that internally. You've talked about passphrases.
Yes, you've talked about that.
But also even password managers. You know, there's some good tools out there that actually help you set passwords that are actually very strong. So if you can't make up a password that is quite complex and hard to uncover, then, yeah,
use a
password manager. That's always a good idea.
I'm just going to add one, and that is to use a professional to help you with this. Often I see people who think that because, you know, I've got a computer, I just turn it on and, you know, it is what it is, and, you know, you can do it yourself. But particularly if you have sensitive information, I think it's really important that you do engage the help of a professional. I would not be able to run my business without our IT professionals that are helping us. I do put a lot of trust in them, but I also spend a fair bit of time making sure that they're trustworthy, and I do trust them, don't get me wrong at all, but, you know, do some research, find out what they're going to do for you, how helpful they are, how up to date are they with all of this stuff, because it's like a lot of things, you know, the guy down the road might know how to fix your emails, but he may not be completely up to date with cybersecurity. So depending on how sophisticated your business is and how important it is to protect your data, I guess really research who's going to help you look after it, and don't try and do it yourself.
Spot on, Joe. Mm. And the other thing is, if you don't have an IT provider, make sure you do backup your data regularly as well. Make sure you've got that backup in place. There are some useful sites that you can refer to.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you want to give us some of these sites?
So one of the ones that I always recommend is cyber.gov.au, and they talk all about cybersecurity. They have alerts up there in terms of the latest cyber attacks and what's happening. So I'd highly recommend check them out.
And they talk about the Essential 8, I think, and we're going to talk about it in another episode.
Yeah.
I just had to put in that because I did mention it in another podcast. We were going to talk about the Essential 8, but I think we're going to do that in another podcast.
We are. Yeah, that's part two.
Yeah. Not the Hateful 8, by the way, the Essential 8.
Essential 8. And there's also the Department of Home Affairs as well. So government websites, cyber.gov.au and Department of Home Affairs. There are a number of sources out there on the net that you can find that will actually provide information around cyber. But as you said, Joe, it's best to look to those that are reliable and secure, and that provides you with the information that is relevant and timely to what is actually happening in the marketplace. And cyber.gov.au do a good job at that. I'd also, suggest, where possible, as you said, employ an expert, someone to come in, or, you know, talk to your IT people about it and make sure that they, because they'll make sure you've got the appropriate firewalls in place, you've got the appropriate software installed on all your devices, and they can help you. And then it's just about education of your team to make sure they're kept up to date.
Yeah. And look, it's going to cost you money to be cybersecurity aware and to be protected, but it's definitely
worth it. Costs you a lot more if you lose the data.
If you're not. So it's to me, it's just an essential spend now. I don't look at it and think, oh, can I save money on this, or can I cut corners? I just know I need to have the best security out there that I can possibly get. And I'm pretty confident that we have very good security. So
yeah, and there's programs. One of the programs we use, Practice Protect, which actually has basically applications within the actual portal that you log into. That's one program that we use. There are a lot out there, just as an example. So, it is an area that is continually evolving. It's becoming more and more sophisticated by the day, and it's important that you stay on top of it, because if you don't, it could cost you your business.
Definitely. Well, we might leave it on that note, Martin. I think that was a good discussion. I'm sure there's a lot more we can dive into cybersecurity, and we may do that hopefully in a couple of weeks' time. And we might try and get an expert in to give us a little bit more information, because we're not experts, we just try to be. Anyway, thank you, Martin, and thank you, Joel,
Thanks,
for producing our episode. If you like our podcast, please share it out with some friends and colleagues. And we really want people to be listening to this. And if you know someone who might need a few tips on cybersecurity, please share this with them too. So that might leave it at that then, Mark.
Thanks, Jo.
Have a nice week, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which this podcast is recorded and produced. We pay our respects to elders both past, present, and future, and to all Aboriginal people.